It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Guys, and joining us right now on the Frisco Rough Rider Hotline, Frisco Rough Riders AA affiliate to the Texas Rangers, it's stand-up comedian and Cincinnati Red guru, Josh Schnee. Josh, what's going on, buddy?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
We're doing well. Nice day here. Rangers are in first place right now.
I saw so that.
How are the Reds?
They're pretty fired up.
Let's talk about the Rangers. The Reds are fine. They're better than people thought they would be. They're in last place where people thought they would be, but I don't know. It's like asking, like, how was your food at the 4 a.m. at the Waffle House? Like, what do you want me to say about it? You gonna go on Yelp and give it a 5-star? It's not gonna happen.
No, you know, the Rangers haven't played the Rays yet, and the Reds actually handed the Rays one of their, what, three losses on the season. So
they did. And then they lost the next two games by 16 to nothing combined score. 8-0 and then 8-0.
Well, then the in Pittsburgh now, I think. I mean, it's Friday. Played Pittsburgh last night. So this is a battle for fourth place.
Well, Pittsburgh's up in front.
Pittsburgh's in second place.
They're not going to stay there.
They're not going to stay there. But, you know, the reason we decided to have Josh on this week is because Monday night, which hopefully this will get out before Monday night, the Rangers are coming to Cincinnati. Are you going to any of those?
I'm going to try to go Tuesday. The youth sports dominate all of my calendars in the evening between my son and my daughter. So we get the games whenever we can. We were there last week for the drubbing of the Phillies, where Josh Harrison actually had to come in and pitch for the Phillies in the late part of the game. And I think we won like 15-1.
Yeah. No, he pitched against the Rangers in that series.
When he hit in mid-90s or something?
I don't know. He was just lobbing it in.
Oh, yeah. It was like more like low 40s.
The Royals had a guy who came in and was throwing in the...
Yeah, he was that outfielder that came in mid-90s.
I'm with you on the youth sports. That's all we do. It's all we do. We got daughter who was in kind of a select soccer team. She also plays softball right now, so that's fun. And then the son is playing basketball and is on a select baseball team. So
yeah,
every night of the week, Tuesday's the only night.
Yeah, that seems to be
God's gave us Tuesday. The gods gave us Tuesday.
How old is your kid? How old are your kids, Josh?
My daughter's 6, and she's just coming out of playing basketball. And I put all the stuff she does in quotes, not because she's a girl, but at 6 years old,
right?
It's watching them run up and down a field or a court at this point.
Right.
She's starting soccer, which I will say, for a 6-year old, she is, and I don't know where it comes from. She put on a goalie jersey last year, and just every team we played was just like, who is that goalie? Because she just has this tenacity. I have never seen it. I don't know if it's from having an older brother and it's all been pent up and it's finally coming loose, but she will go out and dive on balls and dive for balls. And no one taught her any of this. It's been wild. But my son's on a select baseball team, and you know, it's weird. Like, I hate to say this, but it kind of ties into just talking to you guys about the Reds and stuff, is that last year was his first year playing that kind of baseball, and it really rejuvenated my love for the game of baseball, you know, mm-hmm. because it's been such lean years for the Reds, that watching kids play just, you know, at not a high level, but a higher level than what the leagues he had been in, but watching the strategy come back into play, the fundamentals and the joy of winning and, you know, playing for the fun of it. Like, a lot of the other dads said the same thing, like, man, this did a lot for me in terms of just like enjoying watching baseball. Like, that's how bad it's been here locally, you know, for a while.
That's cool. But yeah, we love the tournaments. We wish we've been getting 8 a.m. games, though. That's the worst.
Oh, boy, no.
Yeah, oh, no. No, not at all. But yeah, no, we love it. We love the kids get all, you know, they make a great play, they get excited. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
But
I was the head coach back then. My kids are grown. I mean, my oldest is 26, my youngest is a sophomore. He doesn't play sports anymore, but I was the head coach, head of the league, all of that stuff. And I'm going to tell you, that's an ass whipping. Yeah. And that is where in where the town we live is Richardson, Texas. Richardson, Texas has four high schools. It's just north of Dallas. Has four high schools, tons of elementary schools. They said, John, you're going to run the league. You need to put all the teams together. So try to keep kids from each elementary school together because they can. I said, great. That sounds great. So I start putting it together on one side of town. Every elementary school had 12 to 17 kids playing. And then on my side of town, down here with the unverified Twitter people over on this side.
That's all of us today.
Yeah. I had three kids from my son's elementary. I was like basically on corners saying, you know, I'll pay for your entry fee. Will you play baseball or T-ball? And so these kids whipped our, you know, what's. Yeah. I coached my boys up until probably about 3 or 4 years ago. My record in every sport I ever coached was horrendous.
Something to be very proud of.
Oh, yeah. I coached the football team for 5 years, and we won one game.
Good Lord, John.
Well, John, you heard me tell the story about when I got roped into coaching during COVID, because that's the thing is, like, with my schedule, I never really had the time to commit to making sure I was going to be there for all the practices and the games. And while I enjoyed it, I just couldn't do it. And so I signed up to coach him during COVID when all the comedy clubs were shut down. And I don't know if there was a draft and I was not invited to it, or if they gave me every kid that just checked no on the box where it says, do you know what a baseball is? Like, I don't know, but we were terrible. And I remember, you know, that's kind of how my son ended up in select baseball, is because the difference between skill level of like the better teams and the lower tier teams in the not whole ball was ridiculous. I remember the first game, the other team showed up and they were wearing amazing uniforms, not the ones provided free by the league like ours were. And you know, they're hanging a sign on the fence with all the sponsors of their team. They have warm-up music, they have walk-up music. And I sat my kids down and I said, listen, I just want you all to know that today you're going to get murdered. And I just felt like we should take a minute as a team to prepare our brains for the beating that is about to be handed to us. Cause I promise, good or bad, you're going to remember today for the rest of your life. And it was a bloodbath. I mean, I'm like, why are we playing this team? You know, he's like yelling at kids cause they're not turning double plays correctly. I'm like, if I could get that one to quit playing in the dirt for 5 minutes, I'd call it a W. And I would have.
Yeah. Yeah. No. That's pretty good. That's right. I mean, because there are the kids that Yeah. They just don't want to be there.
No, it was the same bit every time. He would just put his hat on the ground, fill it with dirt, and then put it on his head, and then all the dirt would fall down. And it's like, that was funny in the first practice, dude, but you got to write some new stuff.
So, Josh, let me tell the story about Josh. For those that don't know Josh as a stand-up comedian, I mean, he is one of the funniest. I've been a big fan of Josh's for 3 or 4 years. And the gods aligned it to when we were in Arizona. I remember I told you that night. I was like, hey, man, this guy I really like. Where is Glendale? I didn't know where Glendale was. I was in Surprise. And I said, where is Glendale, Arizona? He goes, man, it's like 15 minutes down the road. And I said, well, I'm going to watch this guy. I've been following him for a few years. He's hysterical. And I'm a big stand-up comedian guy. So we hooked up there. It was really funny. I overheard him say to a guy, like a comedy club, you go to a comedy club, they used to do 2 shows on the weekend, Friday and Saturday nights.
Yeah.
I was going to the later show because you and I were working up until then doing stuff getting stuff ready. I get there and I overhear him say, yeah, tomorrow I'm going to Surprise to see the Reds play the Rangers. And I went, there's my end. Kind of slid over and I went, I was like, dude, I'm in the media with the Rangers. So we ended up talking a little bit. He did his show. It was hysterical. I showed you his show while I was gone.
Right.
He had his son with him, Josh.
Yeah, I would have gone.
So yeah, my son was 10.
He had his son. He could go. And so then the next day we found each other at the game. We just sat there around that table laughing and talking. And you're like, man, I'll come on. And I'm like, that's great. He's one of my favorite comedians, and he's hysterical, and he loves baseball.
I love baseball.
That's a winner.
That's a winner of it all right there. Dude, how did you get into this? What started it? I've got a buddy that was a comedian years ago, but what prompts you to go, you know, I just need to do this?
For me, I wanted to be on Saturday Night Live. You know, like I watched a little bit of stand-up growing up, but it was mainly just like some of the bigger names that were on TV. I wasn't like a junkie for stand-up, but Saturday Night Live really shaped my humor as a youth. And I always wanted to be on that show. And then I got to the point where I was, you know, I was done with college. I didn't say graduated. I was done with college. And I was in the IT world working at Procter & Gamble here in Cincinnati. And I was like, you know, this is something I've always wanted to do. And I have no idea where I would begin, especially living in Cincinnati. So I thought, let me see if I can just make people who aren't my friends and family laugh. You know, maybe I'll just try an open mic night or something. And I was having this conversation with a guy who was a friend of mine that he ran a sports bar near my house. I would go there every night and watch baseball after I got, you know, done with work. And I'm just having this conversation with this guy, and out of nowhere, he basically says, look, I have a doctorate in theater. He was like, I moved to Cincinnati during the boom of stand-up comedy in the 80s, and I taught a class at the university on stand-up comedy. And when the industry died down, I had to find other work to support my family. So that's how I ended up managing a restaurant. He goes, that was my life. And he goes, if you're serious about wanting to try stand-up, I would really enjoy helping you figure out how to get on stage and, you know, write material. And I was like, I mean, it was just very serendipitous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And so he helped me. I brought him material. He gave me some books he thought I should read. He gave me a microphone to take home and plug into a tiny amp so I could hear what my voice sounded like in a microphone. Like, I was 20 years old.
Okay.
And at that time, that was very young to try an open mic night. Now there's like kids in high school doing it.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know, this is 1998. I was the youngest person at open mic nights by probably 10 years. And I had this guy helping me. And so I kind of stood out, you know, for as young as I was. And I came, I guess, across a little bit polished because I had somebody helping me. I wasn't just trying to figure it out on my own. And it just kind of took off for me right away. And instantly, what was going to be a stepping stone to hopefully getting into improv and sketch comedy, I fell in love with stand up. I mean, I was a sponge. I was there every second I could. When I wasn't working, just watching pros and like trying to learn the craft and, you know, obviously single, no kids at the time. And, I fell in love with stand up and it just sort of took off from there. And then, you know, fast forward after that, 3.5 years later, I quit my day job to do stand up full time. And then in July, that'll have been 22 years.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
That's great. And you're touring all over. You know, where our goal is, we're going to get Josh to Texas. You used to come to Texas, right?
Yeah, I haven't been in a couple years, but I was a fairly regular in Dallas and Fort Worth both. So I don't think it's a stretch to say I'll be back there fairly soon. I take summers off. I've been very blessed with a couple side hustles that I started that have taken off. I have an apparel company that I started with a buddy of mine in 2005 that has blossomed into this really cool, you know, group of website brands that we run. One of them, the biggest one, is a local brand called Cincy Shirts that we actually have two brick and mortar stores here in Cincinnati. Oh, wow.
I was just looking at the website. Yeah.
And then we have, you know, we have an MLB Players Association license that we got a couple years ago. So we have another brand called In the Clutch. So that's my shameless plug to Rangers fans. Check out In the Clutch.
Absolutely. Check it out.
Yeah, do it. Go check it out.
And you'll see Rangers t-shirts on there that we created. And, we have another one called Old School Shirts that's all vintage stuff. Anyway, it's all grown to a point where it's let me be very selective with how much stand-up I do. I don't have to be on the road all of the time. And that, in return, has kept stand-up fun for me because it's not something that I'm doing because I have to do. So I'm kind of more selective of the gigs that I take, and I do take summers off when the kids are out of school so I can – be home and do dad stuff and watch sports. But starting in the fall, I'll kick back up again. You know, March, when you guys saw me, I was very busy. I was in Sarasota 1 week, Phoenix the next, and I did a week in Vegas. And then we just got back from 10 days in London for spring break. So I'm home now for a while, which is
nice. I was following on Twitter. I saw the pic. Were you doing shows in London, or you're just there having fun?
I was just there having fun. We're big Star Wars fans, if you can't tell by everything behind me. My dad was a model maker for Kenner Toys, so Star Wars was kind of part of my DNA because he made Star Wars toys. And so it's been passed on to my children, and my wife and her family are big fans. So they announced this. They have like a yearly event called Star Wars Celebration, and we're big nerds. We go to that, and they announced that this year was going to be in London. And it was the same week as spring break, so we decided let's make a whole family trip out of it. We did like 4 or 5 days of seeing all the sights in London, and then ended the week with a few days at this big Star Wars event. It was incredible. A trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, I didn't know until I was looking at your Cincy shirt site that Aaron Pryor, the great boxer, was from Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And he and Alexis Arguello, this is kind of dating myself here. My 8th birthday party in 82 was the night of their first fight, and it was on HBO. And I had pink eye, but we still had a party.
Yeah.
But my best friend to this day, his mom was a little leery of the pink eye. So my best friend went and sat with my dad in the completely other room and watched that fight. And he said it's one of his favorite nights. He still remembers it. But anyway, he's like, yeah, I remember that fight. He remembers what happened. So anyway, that's pretty funny. And I'm thinking about getting him that shirt. Now he's huge. He's 6'10" and weighs about 300. So if you have a
4X, we got big boy sizes.
Okay, I'm gonna check it out.
You know, one of the things, Josh, that we got. You know, you are a huge baseball fan. You coach Little League. Didn't you say you have some stuff with the Reds? You do.
So, yeah, I mean, this is, I'm such a fan, you know, like my whole life, like my dad, God rest his soul, Bengals and Reds, and then Star Wars. Those were like our three like biggest bonds. And, you know, we weren't poor, but we didn't have a ton of money. We would get to maybe 2 or 3 Reds games a year. You know, I would get tickets for getting decent grades one time, and then he would organize some kind of like trip for our whole church to go to a game together. And then we might just randomly find ourselves at a game. But those memories have really like helped through these lean years of the Reds, because I have a son now, and I got, you know, for so long, I was so invested, like how good is the team? Like I would live and die by each win. Like I'm the guy who's watching, you know, they're losing 7-0 playing the Dodgers on the West Coast. You know, it's 2 a.m. here local, right, and I'm still watching the game. Like that's just the kind of fan.
Wait, I wait, 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 wait,
yeah. knowing we're going to get out of this somehow. And then I, you know, as I've been started to take my son and my daughter to games, I've noticed that they don't care who wins. You know, they enjoy the experience of being there. And
yeah.
And as I think back to like my childhood, when I, you know, I can look at the record and know how bad the Reds were. I couldn't tell you any game I went to if the Reds won or lost that game. I just remember enjoying being there. And I've tried to like really embrace that now with my kids, and it's helped with these years that we've been experiencing as Reds fans to be like, you know what? My life is not affected by this at all. And so, you know, because of that, I've always had I've always been a baseball card collector. You know, I've always paid attention to what other teams are doing. If you can see this little thing up here, this is a box that I started a few years ago, and it's actually outgrown that, but I try to see a baseball game if there's one being played, whatever city I'm in, no matter who's playing. Just because I enjoy, there's nothing for me like being at the ballpark in the summer. And I know you guys have to do it for work, and it probably, you know, loses some of its luster. But man, just if you give me an afternoon free, I don't care who's playing. I want to be outside watching baseball.
That's awesome. You know, I'm different than Jeff. Jeff is a full-time, he's actually a full-time journalist and covered this team since 2008 as a play-by-play. I'm a Texas Ranger fan. I grew up like you did, and we teamed up. So our perspective is neat. I come from a diehard homer. I am no doubt that I want the Rangers to win every game. Yeah. He is more objective, and so
I root for the team that scores first.
Yes. And so when we
take that back. I root for the home team because I don't want to play the bottom of the ninth. All right.
That's hilarious.
Now it helps business. It helps business that the Rangers win.
Yep.
It really does. It helps subscribers. It helps our YouTube channel. You know, and back in the day when I worked for a newspaper, it helped with web clicks, which is how you're judged these days. So, and players are a lot better to deal with.
Sure.
When they're on a 4-game winning streak instead of a fucking 7-game losing streak. Pardon my language. And so that's kind of, I do want them to do well. You know, and then you get to know the guys.
Yeah.
And you're like, hey, he's in a slump. He needs to get out. I want to see him have a good game.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's – but, you know, I've been to all 30 ballparks. I've been to six or seven or eight that no longer exists, all because of my job. It's a blessing. I mean, even going to Detroit and Cleveland, I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. In Baltimore – beautiful ballpark. Not a big fan. Not
a great city.
Off of Brad Street, but you got to watch out. But so that's kind of where I take the joy in it when you're like in the middle of a 10-game road trip and you wish you were at home. You're like, no, you know, this is a pretty sweet gig.
Yeah, and for me, I got lucky enough to get credentialed a few years back. Then Jeff and I partnered up, stayed there. So, you know, but when the Rangers lose three, I don't have to ask the tough question about why you suck. They do that.
Well, so the T-shirt company, so when we started it, we were paying someone to print shirts for us. And then at some point we were like, if we're going to make any money, we got to buy some equipment and print them for ourselves.
Yeah.
And so I had met this guy who had this warehouse that was sitting empty somewhere, and he gave us a really sweet deal on the space when we decided to purchase equipment and make the shirts for ourselves. And I kind of, through that, I developed a relationship with this gentleman, and he's a very well respected financial advisor for Baird, but he does a ton of stuff in the community. He sits on a lot of charity boards. And one of the things is he's president of the Reds Community Fund. And so, Bronson Arroyo, former Reds pitcher, is also a musician. And, he was going to do a concert to benefit the Reds Community Fund. And, they wanted me to do stand up to open for him. And that was sort of my introduction to the Reds as an organization, as someone who wasn't just a fan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, we were getting closer to doing the show. And, I don't know if you guys ever met Marty Brenneman or have any interaction with Marty Brenneman, but he's He's a very, very good friend of mine, and I know he's a very polarizing person in and outside of the city for people who have an opinion on him. But
yes,
he was always known for saying what he thought during broadcasts. And Bronson was going through a bit of a slump, and Marty said maybe if he wasn't out playing music, he'd be pitching better. And so... So when that sort of, you know, Marty kind of, he was always the voice of the fan. And if he had an opinion like that, it wasn't very long before that became public opinion. Mm-hmm. And so the Reds thought it might be a bad look if they put on this concert and, you know, and he's not pitching great. And after what Marty said, so they canceled the concert and then, kind of felt bad for me that I was like looking forward to doing this event as like a comedian at an official Reds event. So they asked me if I would perform at Reds Fest, which is the big, I'm sure the Rangers have something similar, yeah. You know, so here it's in December and everybody's all, you know, jacked up waiting for opening day to get there. And so they had me do a couple different things at Reds Fest. One of which they had just hired Dusty Baker to be the manager. And so I recorded a song that was a parody of Dust in the Wind called Dusty, Please Win. and Nick Lachey from the 98 Degrees singer is a buddy of mine. And I had bounced some of the lyrics off of him and he said, why don't I record it with you? So he recorded this song with me. And then they asked me to sing it at Reds Fest. And then, after that, it sort of started to snowball that the Reds would ask me to do more and more things. And they have a charity golf outing every year that's this like big 2-day event at a casino where people go and spend the night, and they have this huge gala and dinner. And so they started having me do comedy at these shows. And then again, more and more, the Reds would kind of bring me in. And at each event, I'd meet a broadcaster or some of the players or former players, like childhood heroes of mine that are now like, you know, friends of mine, like George Foster and Ron Oster and, you know, guys like this that are just like, you know, I know I get all over the place when I start these tangents, but a friend of mine actually made Saturday Night Live. He got on the cast for a few years, Finesse Mitchell. And okay, so I got to go several times to SNL while he was there. And I still to this day tell people, like, I have an easier time talking to an A-list celebrity than I do like an obscure Reds player from the 80s that I collected their baseball card. Like, still to this day, I can't be normal around some of these guys. Like, I don't know what it is. I was just going to say, and that eventually led to me doing a gig for the Reds in Bally Sports during the pandemic where they were doing this sort of like online show that took place during Reds games. It was like a trivia app that Bally's came out with, and people would watch our show, answer questions while the game was going on, and we would talk about the game and things that were happening in it. So again, I've just been very blessed with the way my career's evolved, that as much as I am still a fan and always have been a fan, that I've developed these relationships with current broadcasters and players and things of that nature.
Yeah. So you're not Big Red Machine Reds. I mean, you weren't.
He's too young.
I was born in 77.
What's your first? What's your first baseball?
Sabo. Chris Sabo had to be.
No. Come on. That's like 1990. Like that's way later.
I mean,
your first favorite player, right?
Favorite player. I'll tell you two. So I'll tell you my Reds and non-Reds. My first favorite Reds player, this is going to be dumb, but it was John Franco. And it was I was big into baseball cards, and I throw left-handed and I bat right-handed. And it was such a weird combination that whenever I would get baseball cards, I'd always flip over and look on the back and see who threw left and batted right. And it was Ricky Henderson, John Franco, and Tommy John. And two of those people never batted because they were pitchers.
So those were
John Franco, because he was a Red and because he threw left-handed and bat right-handed, was my favorite Reds player until I started to really understand baseball. And then it was, you know, you could see the progression from like Pete Rose to, you know, like the Eric Davis, Barry Larkin years, and on into like Sean Casey. And then non-Reds, Will Clark was my favorite player as a kid. I just was obsessed with his swing. And then I saw Ken Griffey Jr. play in high school here in Cincinnati. They played my field where my high school team played, and I was in junior high. He was in high school, and I watched him play, and I was like, this dude is next level. And so as soon as he became a Mariner, he became my favorite player, and then stayed my favorite player until Joey Votto came into the league, and he to this day is my favorite player.
I grew up in Denver, and the Denver Bears / Zephyrs were at one point the Reds AAA team for a few years. But I remember Eric Davis came through town.
I liked Eric Davis.
I loved his stance.
Yeah, that weird stand-up straight guy. Yeah,
but he came to a card show. I was looking for this the last couple of days. I think it's in my mom's house. And I got like a big poster of his signed. I got a couple of things. He was probably one of my top five favorite players at the time. I loved Eric Davis. And then that 90 Reds team.
Yeah.
That's the team. That's the team, I guess, of your lifetime.
Yeah.
If you're a Reds fan. Yeah. I mean, in terms of winning and of course. And it's fun. Like over the years, like I do Reds fantasy camp every year now, where you go be a baseball player for a week, and the coaches are all former Reds players, and the Reds have one of the biggest fantasy camps. We have 12 teams with 12 people per team. So there's 144 campers, 24 coaches. And so, like, you know, rest in peace, Tom Browning has become a good friend of mine, Demetri Young, Tom Hume, Danny Graves, who's a Texas guy now, lives down there in San Antonio. Like, just like to be friends with these guys, it's still like kind of surreal for me. And, you know, Marty Brenneman's another one that I've become very good friends with. I actually was got to help on the production side of his documentary a couple years ago. And, you know, it's fun to know these guys on a personal level, but there's still that like inside, like when I see him, I'm just like, I don't know. I think it's like the kind of the way Star Wars is. Like, it just, if I see a Kenner Star Wars figure, like, I don't go, oh, that's fun, I remember that. It's like there's like a memory that instantly gets triggered to like where I was when I first saw it. And so when I'm, you know, when I see some of these guys, I remember like being at the ballpark and it's like, oh my God, I can't believe there goes, you know, Dan Bilardello. You know what I mean? Like these random Reds players. And that's another fun game my buddies and I have is we try to work in obscure 80s baseball players into conversation. Like you can't just say, how about this name? You have to pretend like you had some sort of interaction or that they were in the news, and you just drop it in there. And it's so fun, because the more obscure name, the better, right?
I got the one for you. You're going to kill them with this one. Jeff Kunkel.
Jeff Kunkel's a great one.
Yeah.
That's a great one. That's fantastic.
Every time someone talks about like a hot new shortstop coming up through the Rangers or something, I'm like, oh man, you got to think you had Michael Young, you got Alex Rodriguez, and then there was always Jeff Kunkel.
When you get
that big question mark goes over their head. He was the most, you know, he was like this huge number two overall pick, all of that, and he couldn't. His first game, I remember this, his first game in the big leagues, he hit like two home runs, and then just kind of floated off into oblivion and never hit above 100 or whatever it was.
Yeah, or something like that's pretty good stuff.
You know, My buddy still has the best one. He said, he's like, you'll never guess who I ran into at the store the other day. And I said, who? And he said, Buddy Biancalana. Like, oh God, that's a great one. I don't think that one.
Buddy's a regular. You'll see Buddy a lot at the winter meetings. He wrote a book. He's like a mental skills coach now, I think. But you'll run into Buddy. He's everywhere at the winter meetings.
That's awesome.
It's a great game.
Hey, so when you know, I want to get a little bit into the comedy before we get you out of here. We've kept you a little bit. Tell me, like, what are some of the best heckles or what? I mean, is there a place you love to play? I know you do a lot of stuff in Cincinnati. I saw you're going to do a show and donate all the proceeds to a little league, which I think is just fantastic to do that. But, you know, when did you know you made it? When where were you at when you were like, all right, you know what? I've done it. This is it. Your first big payday or whatever. What? Tell us a little bit about that.
I don't, You know, it's funny. I can think of like benchmark moments that I think they weren't necessarily I've made it, but they were, you know, when you're doing open mic nights and it's just a hobby and it's just something that you're doing for fun and you enjoy, that you start to go down that road of like when you buy a lottery ticket and then all of a sudden you're dreaming about all the ways you're going to spend the money, you know, and you just sit around and be like, wouldn't it be cool? And I had like things on that list that are still to this day being checked off. You know, I would say the three sort of signature ones were when I worked at Procter & Gamble, the headquarters of P&G downtown are right across the street from the Taft Theater, where a lot of the big comedians that come to town play. And so there would be many times where I'd sit there on my lunch break and I'd look out and I'd see the marquee of the Taft and I'd look at who was coming and I'd think like, how cool would it be to do stand up at the Taft one day? And then my first manager that I got when I lived in Los Angeles was the producer of the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
Yeah.
And so he had me out on the road as an opener for Ron White, Larry the Cable Guy, and Bill Ingvall. And so he told me that when Larry the Cable Guy was playing Cincinnati next, that I would get to open for him, which was at the Taft Theater. So that was for sure one of them, was like stepping out on the stage at the Taft and then kind of looking at it from across the street of like, well, there's the place I used to work, you know?
Yeah, sure.
That's cool. So that was one of them. The second one was Comedy Central. When they were doing half hour specials, they would let the comedian choose their background, like what they wanted the set to look like. And so me and my open mic buddies would always sit around and go, well, if you got a Comedy Central special, what would it look like? And so I always had this vision of being in detention. So like it would be like a classroom with a chalkboard and a bunch of empty desks.
I've seen this.
And then a teacher sitting at the, like a mannequin or whatever, sitting at the desk. And I'm like, I could be at the chalkboard, like when it starts, like writing sentences, you know, like I will tell jokes in class. And then it starts and I turn around and I come down to the mic. And so when I found out that I got a half hour special, yeah, when I found out I got a half hour special, like they had all these meetings set up and one of them was like, okay, today we're going to talk about like, have you given any thought to what your set would look like? And I go, I know exactly what I want it to look like. And I told them this whole thing and they sent me drawings of what it would look like. And I'm like, that's it. And then walking into the theater in New York and seeing my set built out, you know, like that's another one that I got goosebumps even just talking about, like the feeling of like, oh my gosh, like this is something I literally dreamed about. And then the third one would be 2 years ago, my first time headlining at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
And awesome. Being on the strip and looking up and seeing my face on the marquee of one of the biggest hotels in Las Vegas on the sign that I was performing at the club that week that just happened last month and it has not gotten old. Like, it's just one of those things that you're like, you dream about and it happened.
Do you have a comedic influence? Was there a guy growing up that you were like, or a movie that triggered you?
It's so creepy to say, but Bill Cosby was the biggest influence as far as comedians go. You know, my parents were strict Southern Baptists. So, that we weren't watching, you know, R-rated anything. So Bill Cosby was one of the few comedians that I saw as a kid, and his special himself was, it set the tone for what, if I ever did this, what I would want to be is like a storyteller, you know, somebody that just felt like they were talking.
Yeah,
and and so he was an influence before I even dreamed of getting on stage. And then Jake Johansson, Wendy Liebman, Seinfeld, Stephen Wright was another huge one for me before I ever
he was stand great up.
yeah
and then after I started, Mitch Hedberg was the biggest influence, hands down. He was a good friend of mine. He helped me out a ton. Like, I just can't say enough amazing things about him. Brian Regan's another one.
Yeah.
Because I've always been a pretty clean comic. And he kind of set the path of like, look, you can do this without having to be dirty. Like, he just kind of made the blueprint. Dave Attell, Bill Burr, Chappelle, There's so many, and then right now, no one is funnier than Nate Bargatze right now.
You know Nate?
I do, and he's always been super nice to me, and just as a person, we share a lot of interests. He's a huge baseball fan, and as a fan of the craft, I just don't think anybody's doing it better than him right now.
That's great. I love Nate, and I saw Nate when he came to town. And look, here's my deal, and let me be very clear. You can say the F word, every other word, and still be funny to me if your stuff's good. I'm not biased that I really like clean comics better than, I just want you to have good stuff you tell me. Dave Chappelle, one of my favorites. But I really do appreciate the guys that can do it without the F word, every other word, because I think that craft is, to me, it's really more impressive and doing that. Your dry bar comedy, tell me a little bit about that. That's the big one right now. I mean, you've gotten millions and millions and millions of hit on that thing. That's the one you watched that I showed you. Yeah. How did that thing come together?
Oh my gosh. It's crazy to even think about where that's gone. You know, and I'll say this about clean comedy. Like I will curse from time to time, but it's pretty rare. And it's kind of, if I'm just relaxed and the environment kind of feels like it's not people who showed up expecting to hear something squeaky clean.
Right.
But for the most part, I write clean. And the reason that is that guy that I told you about who helped me start, he told me something that I tell other comics that are starting out to this day. And it stuck with me to this day. He says, treat profanity like a spice. He said, it will make a steak taste really good, but you would never have a plate of oregano for dinner. That's always stuck with me, that little anecdote. And I just said, you know, when I was first starting out, the clubs that I worked the most were Cincinnati and Dayton. And the woman in Dayton, who I still refer to as one of my comedy moms, she told me when I started, she said, listen, you're a host of a show. The cleaner that you can be, the more work I can give you, because I'll know I can put you up in front of clean headliners, and I'll know I can put you up in front of dirty headliners. So you can be dirty, but I won't be able to use you as much. And then that morphed into colleges. You can be dirty, you're going to get a lot less college work, because most colleges want someone who can show up and be squeaky clean. And then that transformed into corporate gigs, where I am now. Where it's like, yeah, we can try to find you work at these corporate events, but 99% of them are going to require you to be squeaky clean. So just for the purpose of getting more work, I've always tried to write clean and stay clean. And I also do think there's a bit of a challenge to it of being funny without being hacky and without being dirty. Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, the other side of it is on Sirius XM, when you get paid for streaming comedy, there's one channel that requires only squeaky clean material. And I was told once that all the other comedy channels have 55,000 tracks that they can pick from to put on those channels. The tracks that are qualified for the clean comedy is about 1,200 because no one's doing decision. It, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can get clean comedy and a good recording of it, you can get played on that channel all day. And that's a lot of money every month for doing nothing.
Right.
And so when Dry Bar came along, it was basically, I call it Mormon Netflix. That's what it is. It was created by a company called VidAngel.
Yeah.
And that's what they are. They're Mormon Netflix. What they would do is they created this sort of Netflix-esque streaming service, but they would take popular Hollywood TV shows and movies and edit them and remove the cursing, the violence, taking the Lord's name in vain, nudity, whatever. You know, so we always joke that if you watch Game of Thrones on VidAngel, every episode was like 30 seconds. Yeah. Because they took out all the good stuff. So that company decided they wanted to build the largest library of clean stand-up, but it was only for their subscribers, which were mostly Mormons. They're based out of Provo, Utah. And so I had a couple friends of mine that did a Dry Bar special, and I saw it, and I was like, where did you record this? It looks incredible. And they're like, oh, it's this little you know, 150 seat venue in Provo that's recording these specials, you know, of clean comedians for their streaming service. And so I said, what's it pay? And they're like, it's not great, but they give you the tape. And at that point I was really trying to amp up my corporate work and I hadn't had a good tape made in a while. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this only to get the tape so that I can cut it up and use it to try to get more work. And so that was my attitude when I went out there, was just do it and get a good tape and see what that gets you. Well, in the process of that happening, they shifted their business model to, you know what, we're not going to use this to just get people to subscribe to our service. We're going to chop up clips of it and start putting it on Facebook and YouTube and try to get the word out about us that way. And so they partnered with Facebook, who at the time was trying to figure out a way to compete with YouTube. They were losing all their content creators to YouTube. And so to do that, they had to start paying content creators for views and then putting ads in there.
Yeah.
And Drybar was one of the partners that they joined up with. Okay. And so it just sort of was a perfect marriage of my special coming out when Facebook was like, we're going to put out anything that you guys create to everybody that we think might want to see it. And so when they started releasing clips of my special, I mean, it was getting more views than I had ever had on anything in my life. You know, my garage sale bit's over 10 million, I think, right now on Facebook, which is insane. I mean, that's like insane.
Yeah.
Something that I went into not really caring about how it did, other than for my personal use, you know what I mean? Right. And then since then, it's just snowballed into like this huge, like it's got a huge following. A lot of it had to do with COVID. You know, people were staying home, consuming comedy either more often than they ever had, or maybe even for the first time because, you know, they were at home and the kids were at home and they needed to play stuff that the whole family could hear. So whatever you could say about the stars aligning, it was just perfect timing with my special coming out. And that's, it's just good. Done more for me than anything I've ever done. And I still can't believe I'm saying it.
Your Provo, Utah reference made me think of a couple things.
Fletch?
That was the number one. Number one.
Thank you. Provo, Spain? My favorite comedy. Every time I say it, I immediately think, what am I doing in Provo?
No, you know, this is another thing with my best friend. My kid's doctor's office, it's the rooms are B and then the number. And so whenever we're in B1, baby, B1, B1, and like I parked at a game in the parking garage, it was the sign, the level was B1. So I had to take a picture and send it to all my friends because that of all the Fletch things, the weirdest one that sticks out to us is B1.
My best friend and I, we're obsessed. We quote it. I was quoting it last night talking to him, but I want to say it was the Pirates. Somebody had a pitcher whose last name was Hanerhan.
Oh no, Slapshot.
we all, every time his name came up, like if we were at a game, we would just go Petterass, that Petterass Hanerhan. What kind of name is Sneed? I always go Comanche Indian. Just a reflex. I could talk about Fletch on an entire podcast with you guys.
So no, that is the Fletch, probably that Petterass Hanerhan, but also Slapshot. One of the famous scenes is Hanrahan, an opposing player, and Paul Newman is riling him because his wife has come out as gay.
Yeah. And
Hanrahan. Hanrahan's a good one. Oh, man. And then, you know, there are a couple shows that my wife watches, and they'll drop in, like, just randomly, like, names from Fletch. Like, these actors will be acting like they're a FBI agent, let's say, and they'll say, "I'm Agent Poon with the FBI," or Agent Underhill, you know, just something like that. And I catch it and start laughing, and she's like, "Why are you laughing?" But so I finally had to show it to her. She had never seen Fletch. She's 40. She'd never seen Fletch, so we watched it last Thanksgiving. And she just didn't get it. I mean, she laughed some, of course. I'm dying quoting all the lines, but she wasn't in it. It wasn't there for. And then the same thing with Animal House, Caddyshack. She just Blazing Saddles. She just doesn't. It just doesn't work for.
And it's genius.
Yeah.
Listen, we've kept you here a long time, but I'm going to get him out. I want him to tell this story, and it's his fault that he brought this up. He brought up Nick Lachey.
Oh.
And Nick Lachey leads to a hysterical story, and I'm not even going to set it up and say what it is. How does Nick Lachey set this up? You have to tell that story.
So, okay. If you're watching this and you're thinking like, hey, what kind of person is this comedian? Is it someone that I should look into? I want you to ignore this story when you make your decision. But I've always talked about on stage that there are certain things that you should do just for the story, right? If you have the opportunity to walk away with having a good story to tell, you do it. So many years ago, I farted on Jessica Simpson. There's a story behind this. I don't want people to think I just go around crop dusting celebrities. Like, this, something led up to this. So, and I know, look, I get where I'm talking to people right now. I get that she's the hometown girl, right? That's she's down there. So, I was living in Los Angeles, as I mentioned, and I was flying home to Cincinnati for Thanksgiving, and it was a red eye flight. Left LA about 1 a.m., stopped in Dallas, and then that same plane continued on to Cincinnati. And the airport's, you know, dead this time of night. I'm not really paying attention to anybody. So I give my ticket to the woman to walk down onto the plane, and in the jet bridge while we're waiting to board, I notice the girl standing directly in front of me is Jessica Simpson. She's all by herself. And at that time, she was married to Nick Lachey, who, as we've mentioned, is from Cincinnati and always seen around town. It's Thanksgiving. I thought that's probably where she's headed. And so just making conversation, I just said, so you going to Cincinnati? And she just turns around. She gives me this look and she's like, no. Why would I go to Cincinnati? And in my head, I was like, well, aside from the list of reasons I just came up with, is that a crazy question to ask anyone that's getting on a plane that's going to end up in Cincinnati. And normally I would say, you know, something smart ass. And I kept my cool. I was really proud of myself. I was like, oh, I wasn't trying to pry. I'm sorry. I just thought maybe you're going to visit your husband for the holidays. I said, I'm a stand-up comedian. I've actually met him a couple of times. He's always been a really nice guy. And she goes, I'm sure you've met my husband. And then turned around and I was like, no, you didn't. I mean, because, you know, I was upset. Like, I just feel that I nor anyone should ever be treated that way. I don't care who you are or how many times I've downloaded pictures of you and photoshopped myself into them. Like, that's not the point right now. Like, I'm a human being and I would have been able to get over it. I really would. I'm good at letting that kind of stuff go if I was sitting anywhere else on the plane. But I'm in the last row. I'm in the first row of coach. And she's in the last row of first class, just kind of across the aisle. So every time I look up, I see her. And every time I see her, I just get mad all over again, the whole flight. And so we land in Texas. I'm wide awake in the middle of the night to the point where I'm like, I'm getting off this plane. I'm going to get some food and then get back on before it takes off again. So I step out into the aisle. She's just waking up, takes off her sleep mask, gets all her stuff together. She ends up directly behind me while we're all in the middle waiting for the front door to open when I felt it. And it wasn't like my stomach hurts. It was, this is God letting me get my revenge for the way that I was treated a couple hours ago, you know? And even then I was like, I shouldn't do it. Cause if it makes a sound, everybody's going to obviously know it was me. And then also the power of the plane had been turned off. So the air wasn't circulating anymore. So there were going to be a lot of civilian casualties, but it was all I could do. I knew at that point it was going to be that story or no story. I can't call someone else for a better idea. It's in the moment. So yeah. I just throw it out there and it's awful. I call it unacceptable. The name of my album where this is recorded is called Unacceptable. Because it was so bad. People were turning around like they might be able to see it in the air. It was just like this reaction. And I wanted to turn around to see if she was making a face, but I knew there's no way I could do it without laughing. So I'm just standing there like, keep it together. The war is over. Clearly, you're the winner. Let's get off this plane. And so we finally get off the plane. And I can hear people talking about, like, oh, my God, I don't think I've ever smelled anything. And so I'm kind of – I've got this weird sort of pride I'm walking around with. And like, as a comedian, you say and do a lot of things that you think are hilarious, and none of them count until you ask someone who isn't a comedian, like, is this funny? So I call my best friend back here in Ohio where it's 4:30 in the morning. And he's like, hello. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry I woke you. I just had to tell someone that about 10 minutes ago – I farted on Jessica Simpson. And he was like, that's awesome. And I was like, thank you for saying that. You know, because I knew if he liked it at 4:30, he was going to love it by noon. So that's, yeah, you know, that's how I roll. You know, if you disrespect me, there's a good chance. And and nice I bring it, dude. I mean, like 6 months later, she's doing commercials for a Proactive Solution. Like, I never used to have acne. And it's like, well, maybe you should be nice to people and they wouldn't mess your face up.
Well, Josh, this is great. Anything else before we get him out of here?
What do you think is going to happen in this three-game series, Reds Rangers?
Listen, I think the Reds will dominate game one and then get blown out games two and three. Like, that's just been their MO for this entire season so far. It's like they come out and you're like, oh, okay, maybe this is the turning around. And then the next day you're like, no, we suck again. And, you know, it's a very interesting year for the Reds because I have the utmost confidence in our starting three pitchers in the rotation. Sure. I think Hunter Green, Lodolo, and Ashcraft like legitimately have the potential to be like dominating starting three for a long time. Yeah. I think that Jonathan India and Tyler Stevenson have proven they're not a flash in the pan from their rookie season and that they are something you can build around. I'm going to hate to see Votto go, but he is the last guaranteed money on the books, and he's gone after this year. The farm system is loaded. I mean,
that trade was a good deal.
Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain, I mean, Christian Encarnacion Strong, Marte Arroyo. I mean, they have some studs in the minor leagues right now that they got from letting the few studs we had go. Luis Castillo, yeah. Tyler Mahle, those guys. So I do think the future is bright. I do hope we get to see them this year because I think that that will take away from a painful season in the win-loss column. These guys are the future, and I can't wait to see them. But on a record level, it's going to be bad. And it's just sucks because literally 2 years ago, you thought they had something to build around when Castellanos was here and some of those other guys. They made the playoffs. It was a short run, but you're like, man, we could really have something special here. And then they just blew it up. And so I hope those days come back sooner rather than later, but I'll be there with my son and daughter anyway, rooting them on no matter how well they're doing, and just be happy that we're in the park.
Nick Lodolo, TCU, Fort Worth.
Yeah, he's done. I have a lot of friends at the Reds that I won't name names, but a lot of guys think that he could end up being the guy even before Hunter Green, with the way he pitches and as many pitches as he has, that once he really gets dialed in, that he could be the guy.
There you go.
Absolutely. Listen, guys, we're going to get out of here. Hey, Josh, we're going to get you back on sometime. This has been so much fun. When you come to town, we're going to do something, guys. We'll do a Rangers Today night, and we'll get all together and get out to the deal and do that. But Josh and I keep in touch, so we'll keep messing with each other now that he's down at my level on Twitter.
That's right. That's right. I got to interact with all the non-blue check marks now.
Gen Pop. We got back with the general population.
You're back with Gen Pop now. That's where you are. I tried.
Jeff, are you going to pay that? Are you going to pay that $8?
Oh, no, I'm not going to pay.
I respect it.
Appreciate you.
Are you going to do it?
No.
I mean,
he doesn't need a check mark.
I mean, I mean, if we could be honest here, like my career could use seven or eight different parody accounts of me. I could use that kind of. the more me's out there, the better at this point.
There you go.
Well, Josh, we appreciate it, buddy. Last thing, anything else?
No, just thanks for coming on, taking all this time, and enjoy the series. And we'll
guys, I'll come on anytime you'll have me talking about the Reds or just baseball or kicking it. You guys are awesome, and John, I appreciate you being so kind to me, and I really do hope our paths cross again.